Welcome to Public Square, Conversations in Democracy, where we explore the heart of democracy. I'm your host, Witte van Renswijk, on a mission to reboot the public sector and invigorate local democracies worldwide. Join us as we spotlight game changers, share visions, and practical innovations. Let's begin today's inspiring conversation. Today, we're traveling to the north of Norway, to the third biggest city of the country, somewhere tucked in between the fjords. And in today's conversation, we'll be talking with Øyvind Tanum, the smart city manager at the city of Trondheim. We'll be exploring two very exciting topics. First one is going to be on the smart city network that they've built in Norway. And more particularly, we're going to talk about cooperation between municipalities. And then from there, we're going to talk about AI in government and for government and how actually AI, the intersection of AI, community input, and policymaking, how they work together. So really excited for this conversation and a very warm welcome to you, Øyvind.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Øyvind, to kick things off, let's go back in time. Let's go back to those days when you were still very young. And I would like to ask you the question of, what is your first memory, your earliest memory of democracy?
Well, I think like democracy is something you come to think of quite early because it has something to do with how people agree on things. So those kind of memories are quite early. But I think what comes to mind is actually when Obama launched his campaign and he did this on Reddit. This was, for me, this was kind of the pivotal moment where democracy kind of went into the digital space. Where he had the Ask Me Anything session and he got, I think, 50,000 inputs in the course of 2 hours or something. And for me, that's the clearest memory of democracy and e-democracy in the beginning.
And why was that such a pivotal moment for you?
Because it showed so clearly what you could do with technology that wasn't available before. Like there, 5 years earlier, there's no way you could have had that kind of conversation with the upcoming president of the United States.
Okay, interesting. So I think that's a pretty good segue into what we're going to be talking about today, right? You know, like the influence of technology on democracy. And before we get into those two topics of the smart city network and AI, I think we should first go to your city, to Trondheim, and talk a little bit about your role. You work there. So you are smart city manager. Whenever you go to family party and you got to explain to a 10-year-old what a smart city manager does in the day-to-day, what do you tell them?
It's quite a difficult conversation, but I try to explain that I try to use technology in a way that makes the society more sustainable. I think there's so many opportunities with technology, but the way you use it and the way you integrate it into the everyday work of a municipality, I think that's one of the challenges that are worth focusing on.
How does it translate to some of your responsibilities and your day-to-day work in the city? And what are some unique challenges that you have in Trondheim?
In our city, we have a lot of technology companies and startups and students. So for us, it's more about navigating, let's say, in the jungle of ideas and technology and figure out how we can create spaces where we can test things out, experiment, do pilot projects to see what works and what doesn't. And then as a consequence of that, implement it into the organization. Mm-hmm. So my job is to facilitate and manage and encourage those kind of projects.
And I think important to know, so in Trondheim you have, is it the biggest or at least one of the biggest engineering schools of Norway, right? Does that play an important role in kind of, yeah, you just said also experimenting with technologies. I imagine they are an important partner. How is this influencing your work to be working in a city with such a big university?
We have the biggest tech university in Norway. So of course this has a huge impact. So what we're trying to do is learn how we can better integrate that into the everyday challenges we have. We have programs like University City Program, where leaders from both organizations meet a few times a year to align their goals and focus areas so that we can faster get new knowledge into the city. And we can give researchers and students easier access to the challenges we're actually facing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And because you said experimenting with new technology, but let's also go to the flip side and like why do we want to apply technology in the first place? And that was actually my second part of my question as well. What are some of the challenges that you face in Trondheim?
I think the fact that we have really skilled people and researchers that knows a lot about the technology, but not really how what it should apply to. Because I think if you focus too much on technology, then technology becomes the problem. And that's not really what we want to focus on. But to be smart about technology, how you use it, how it can contribute. I think that's something that are more, maybe a bit more challenges for Trondheim since we have so much tech people.
And do you have an example for us of a recent smart city project that you've implemented and I think the world should know about?
You want success stories, right? That's what you're after.
Right.
No, I think the biggest smart city project that we just finished is a project called Positive City Exchange, which is about creating positive energy blocks or blocks that create more energy than it uses during the course of the year. And this is something that taps into one of the big challenges we have as a society, which is how we manage and use energy. And it involves a lot of different stakeholders, both within our city and outside it.
And I would also like to take a step back. Smart cities, here's a provocation I would like you to respond to. I feel like smart cities, 5 years ago, probably, every medium to large size city in Europe would have a smart city manager. But I feel like as time has evolved and technology becomes more of, you know, like a given that we got to use technology in city management, that there's maybe a, I don't know if decline is the right word, but there's less of a centralization of smart city into one function. So my question for you is, how have you seen that term, that concept of smart city evolve, and how do you think it is going to evolve in the future?
I think you're correct, spot on. I think smart city came into the sphere as something that's about technology and the idea that we can build a city based on just good technology infrastructure and it will solve everything. And then we realized, well, maybe the technology isn't the problem. So that also means that the wording will go away after a while and it will become more about just developing cities. And I think that's a really good thing. I've always had the kind of idea that smart city is not that we really need to define the entire thing. It's more about what it contributes with.
And how do you, talking about success criteria, how do you actually evaluate that your city is smart? How do you measure your work?
We've been working a lot with measuring smart and sustainable cities, not only in Trondheim, but in other Norwegian municipalities and also globally. A lot of the KPIs are about impact. For example, how do you manage your water in a city? That's not initially a smart city project, but you need some of the smart city logic to get there. And I think that's also really important that we focus on the impact we have. So to focus on measuring impact instead of just telling good stories, I think that's important.
I would love us to also explore the idea of the smart city network, which we've already been talking about before this podcast, and I find rather fascinating. But could you introduce to our listeners, what is the Norwegian Smart City Network about, and where does it come from? As in, like, what inspired the creation of such a network in the first place?
I think you said Smart City Waves like started 5 years ago, and I think that was the time when we started creating this network, because we had a lot of municipalities that had some kind of smart city project or program, and came quite natural to collaborate and figure out what other cities were doing. So what came up quite fast was when we were looking for, okay, what kind of challenges do we have? Do we have something that maybe not every city, but many of the cities are trying to solve at the same time? And one of the things that came up was citizen engagement. Like, we all want to do it, and it's one of those things that it's kind of hard to be against, but it's not obvious how you do it well. So that's when the entire smart city network kind of created this spin-off, which was a citizen engagement network. And that's where we have spent a lot of our time and energy, and which have also created the most impact, I would say.
And so specifically, citizen participation was the first kind of challenge that you all focused on. That was kind of one of the initial topics to really focus on within the network. And all right, that's interesting. And what are the advantages of working in, you also already shared it, of course, like you have all the same challenge, but what is the power of such a network in solving that same challenge? How has it helped cities move the needle on citizen participation?
I think citizen engagement as a, let's say, domain is not that mature yet, at least not digital citizen engagement. So the fact that even though a lot of municipalities had the same challenges, they approached it from different angles. So what this enabled was we were able to use whatever the municipalities worked on and share between other municipalities. In that sense, we had a lot of different roles and developing knowledge and ways to use it inside the municipalities. What we aimed to do, what we said we would do, was to make it easier for municipalities to excel at digital participation.
What are some of the things that you offer to the municipalities to excel?
Offer them tools and made it easier for them to use practical digital tools in their participation process. And we also created this knowledge base and a forum so they can meet other people with the same roles and other and same challenges.
And talking about challenges, so we'll go back to the tools in a moment, but first on the challenges, what have you identified talking about citizen participation in Norwegian municipalities? What are people typically struggling with when they talk about citizen participation in government?
All the kind of standard challenges with how you engage people, and how people get heard, and how you give them feedback and so on. But one of the things that kind of became clear quite early is that we don't need to do a good citizen engagement project. We need to do a lot of projects at the same time.
And isn't the challenge then mainly a challenge inside your organization? As in, I hear you saying like, okay, you said it before, you know, like let's not focus on single projects, but let's focus on like the sum of the projects and the overall impact in doing so, in scaling up that impact of citizen participation. What is the challenge there specifically in bringing that change management?
I think first of all is to realize that this is something that to some extent need to be managed and governed. Because if we're really serious about doing citizen engagement, then we need to account for how we do it. And on the other end, it's also a bit awkward when we talk to citizens and they say, well, we had a colleague of yours last week that asked kind of the same questions. Maybe you should talk to her. So when you do more and more citizen engagement, quite soon you realize that we need some kind of system and logic when we do this. Because doing citizen engagement also means that you actually care about the results of those processes.
Okay. So interesting. So what you're saying is we need a system, we need a logic. I feel you're saying we need processes. I would dare to challenge that a little bit. I think the way I think about scaling impact and citizen participation and getting to like bigger scale, I think it starts beyond processes. It starts with culture and nurturing a culture and an attitude. Just to say, I think I'm a bit more on like the soft side than on the hard side of things here. And I think it's, we often think about, or I think about culture of engagement in kind of three pillars. It needs a clear political mandate. You need, and yeah, then we're getting to your point, you need the internal structure and the organization. And thirdly, you need the skills and the resources. But I find it interesting that you would say, okay, the first thing we need is basically processes and rules. How have you done that in Trondheim?
I agree with what you're saying. And I think if you don't have the culture for citizen engagement, there's no reason talking about the system because you will never get there. But the way we approached this was our CEO created this network of people working with citizen participation, also inside the organization. So we're able to both collaborate with other cities, but also have a conversation inside our organization about how we do citizen engagement in different domains. Whether you're a city planner or you make more strategic societal plans or you're working within healthcare, you do citizen engagement in some way. So having these people talk together, maybe we started to create a more common engagement culture.
What are some of the ingredients of such a framework? So let's try to make that concrete. What are kind of the key elements of such a framework?
You need the examples, like you need the good stories. So when we succeed and when we don't, but you also need to have those network meetings where you engage in dialogue with other colleagues. And I think as a natural consequence of that, you start creating systems and processes that are similar. So you kind of mature the way you work with citizen engagement also inside the organization.
And is that also something you're trying to do? So bring it back to the network. Is that something you're trying to do also with the Smart City Network, trying to create like a common language, a common framework, a common system to think about citizen participation?
That's exactly what we've been doing. The network consists of maybe around 20 municipalities. And in Norway, we have 356 of those. So everything we can develop that helps other municipalities, I think it's of great value, especially for the small municipalities.
I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, like to collaborate as municipalities on common challenges. I'm just trying to think, like, what is the flip side of it? What are disadvantages to actually collaboration? Because it seems so logical to collaborate. So what are kind of the struggles you've been facing setting up such a network?
One of the challenges to figure out what we should collaborate on and what we should leave to each municipality. Because the idea that everything could be standardized and all collaboration is good, I'm not sure it's true. I think you need something practical to collaborate on. If not, you'll probably end up spending a lot of time trying to solve problems that you can't solve together.
What is such an example of a very precise challenge you have defined within citizen participation? Or in other words, like how has the network already shown its impact?
For municipalities, you have different kind of things you do. Like every municipality has a societal plan. You have an annual budget. You do area development plans. And to come up with examples and share them of how municipalities do these different types of processes that others can copy. So you both give them a template, access to some tools, and you also give them people to talk to. So every municipality doesn't need to come up with the solution themselves. They can get there a lot faster.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. Sharing best practices, and I like the way you put it, is sharing best practices can, then we always think about like a round table and like, okay, let's all share what we've been doing. But the way that you turn into action, let's get to a template, let's bring that expertise into something that is reusable, because we cannot expect all those 300 plus municipalities probably to have top-notch participation officers. Some don't have the capacity, but they still might have to do the same mandated engagement. So what if we can provide them with the tips and tricks and something really tangible to work with? I like that. Looking forward, Øyvind, what is your vision for the future of the network? How do you, based on where you're today, where would you like to go in the future with the network?
I think we're at the point where we have achieved what we said we would do. We would make it easier for municipalities to do citizen engagement. But I think the next step is, it's a lot about technology. Because I think the recent wave with AI that kind of seemed to go into everything, I think that's also something that could have an impact in citizen engagement, for good and bad. So I think our goal as a network should be to figure out how we can use that potential and get as much positive impact as we can. Because it also built quite nicely on what we've done so far with working systematically and gathering insights, and we have both a taxonomy and a process for how you do citizen engagement. So using that as a foundation for the use of AI, I think that could have a huge positive impact.
Before we, because this is now we're getting to the topic of AI. Before we get into that, you mentioned the word taxonomy. Can you elaborate a little on like what is that exactly that you have constructed there?
What we realized working with the societal plan in Trondheim was that when we get, I think we got 3,000 inputs from citizens on one single plan. And this was a myriad of citizen engagement processes or approaches, everything from digital platforms to people writing a future story about their city, to engaging children and attending festivals. So when you get 3,000 inputs from all of those arenas or activities, how do you analyze that in such a way that you will both kind of extract the meaningful things that came in and that you can also present it for the politicians and account for how you got there? So we got inspired from the sustainability work and sustainability KPIs and figured out we need some kind of structure to be able to both analyze it well and communicate how we analyzed it. And that kind of sorting model is what we call a taxonomy. And this is something that have been spreading across cities because everyone wants to account for how they do this.
And where does that, why do you need a taxonomy in the first place? And especially why do you want it to be shared? As in, you know, what could be some of the advantages of all cities using the same taxonomy?
Like, first of all, this citizen engagement process, it needs to plug into something, right? It needs to plug into ongoing project processes, planning initiatives. And that's the same for all municipalities. So that kind of interface, it makes sense to standardize. And I also think we need more research on this topic. That's also why we involved NTNU or a university into developing this taxonomy. Because we need to understand how we can analyze citizen engagement at scale in such a way that we're able to actually manage the entire process and the outcome of it. If you as a human want to interpret 3,000 inputs, it's quite hard. I can probably remember three and then I'm kind of used my capacity. So I think we need some kind of model to do this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that really resonates, of course, with the work that we are doing as well. Like, we've seen so many cities collect hundreds of inputs, and then you spend weeks in the spreadsheet, and ultimately leads to a lack of impact because, you know, we often see like this three kind of ways to go about it. Either way one, and that's the worst way, is you don't do it at all because it's too much work, and that's really, I mean, then your citizen engagement is leading to more distrust than what you had before, which is really a shame. Secondly, you hire a consultant, expensive, but they will do the job well. Or thirdly, you do it yourself and you often manually go through those inputs and you spend a lot of time on it. So those are not really the most attractive options. And I think that's also a really good segue into the next topic, which is AI for government, AI for community engagement. I think I wanted to ask you, like, okay, what do you see as the main use cases for AI in community engagement and in government? But I think we've just answered it, right? Like the data analysis part. But let's maybe dig a bit deeper there. Where do you feel that the technology is at today in order to help us with that challenge, and where do you think it could be going?
The way I understand AI, or a lot of what it does, is it can find patterns. Big language model like ChatGPT is basically a pattern recognizer when it comes to language. And it does a lot of things incredibly well, but we also have seen that it invents stuff. That's really not what we want with citizen engagement. If we're able to take that technology and create kind of the guardrails so that we know why it comes up with the things it does and it can point back to things, then I think the way we as humans and people working with citizen engagement can collaborate with an AI, I think that creates a huge potential.
So, and to bring that back to the point you made earlier about the taxonomy, so the way that you envision that very practically is, you know, you've got your thousands of inputs, your 3,000 contributions you were talking about earlier. First thing is you basically classify it onto your taxonomy, right? You have those different classes. And then now using generative AI, we can actually get to the point. Previously, we would only have that, because I do believe that classification was already possible, right? But it's the generative AI part where we, you know, where we can summarize all those inputs and get quickly an understanding of like, hey, what is being said here? or even to the extent that we can ask the AI questions of like, hey, you know, browsing through this data, how do old people versus young people think differently about it, which is yeah, truly fascinating. What I wonder about is whether this can close that gap with the decision-making level, because I do think that is still a challenge for citizen participation, you know, like collecting those 3,000 inputs. So maybe just continuing on the example, you know, how does it ultimately stream into the formal decision-making processes? So could you tell a bit more about that, Oyvind, from your experience? Because it's one thing to have the technology and to have a nice report, but is that enough?
It's probably not ideal. I think there's a lot of ways we can extend this also into decision-making processes. Talking from a like local democracy perspective, there's a lot of plans and political decisions that we both do citizen engagement before the decision is made, and that also need to be completed after the decision is made. And I think one of the advantages with generative AI, which we've been exploring, is how you can, like, you can do the citizen engagement process and summarize it, but you can also ask questions related to different policy development projects. So you can use that kind of insights that you gathered in one process and link it up to other decision-making process. So of course, there's big potential there, but there's also a danger that you, let's say, misuse. I think we need to be really aware of what the AI does. Like, how does it create things? And what's our logic? What's the logic we have when we decide to use AI? As people, we need to be really aware of when we use AI and not. We need to be able to explain it. If not, we might be fooled by the AI.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of the things at CitizenLab, when we think about the use case here of AI for data analysis, one of the things that we try to make sure that we have in the design of the AI is to always make every single statement that the AI comes up with to make it verifiable, that you can reference back to where the original input comes from. So that, yeah, it's assisting humans rather than taking over the job from us. It's augmenting our work rather than replacing it. I think that's an important one. But let's go back for a moment to the policy making, because I would like to dig a bit deeper into that. I think with you being like a smart city manager, I would like to get back to that challenge of like, you know, is citizen participation making an impact? Is it leading to change in policy making, into decision making? And again, get a bit deeper into like, what is blocking us today from increasing that impact of what the community is saying on policymaking? What do you see there today as the main challenges in connecting community input to actual decision making?
I think one of the reasons I got interested in citizen engagement to begin with is I think it's really interesting how you can take a like area of expertise where people have spent maybe 5 years of education and then working with the problem for 10 years to really understand the topic. And then you're going to get citizen engagement on that topic you know so well. So kind of the complexity between understanding something really difficult and having, let's say, regular people be able to have opinions about it. I think that translation process, that's really interesting. And I also think that's where a lot of the value in citizen engagement related to decision making is, because if you do this process as well, you need to be able to describe the challenge in such a way that people can have opinions about it. And it also opens up from different perspectives, because when you come into things from a certain background, it of course affects the way you look at the problem. So to use citizen engagement to have a broader, more nuanced view and also make it more practical, I think that's one of the main accomplishments you can do by citizen engagement.
Mm-hmm. I find that interesting because it's something also on previous podcast episodes that we've been hearing about, like, okay, you know, present your questions to your community as if you're, just as I asked you at the start, like as if you presented to a 10-year-old. And also we had Aja from Seattle. She was talking about, you know, the importance of especially capturing lived experiences. What I put on my head as a devil's advocate here, I wonder if we aren't dumbing things down too much for the community. And because there is that tension of, you know, like there is technical expertise. And of course we want to value that, but then what is, or let me put it this way, what do you see as then role of citizens in citizen participation? What do they contribute as opposed to, if we don't think about it as technical expertise, what do they contribute?
I think you need it to get the nuances. Like you have politicians, they're elected a lot because they're their values, and you have technical expertise in certain domains, and you need something to nuance those perspectives. And I think that's also why it's important to do different kinds of citizen engagement processes. Like I mentioned our societal plan. We had maybe 20 different kinds of activities. Everything from a digital platform. You can get easy inputs and it's like quite explicit. But we also did things like having citizen assemblies, which is really time consuming and like it's an expensive process. But the value of presenting topics and dilemmas and having citizens discuss them, like it opens up like the domain of knowledge in such a way that you wouldn't be able to do without involving citizens.
You use the word nuance, and I think it's a good one. It shows to the value of believing in the diversity of opinions, right? Yeah. And seeing the value in hearing all those different perspectives, how they can blend together to an enriched end decision in the end. Now, to wrap up this conversation, Ovi, now I would also like to talk a little more about, we've been talking about technology, mainly about AI. You mentioned online tools, online citizen participation tools. If we zoom in on the state of those platforms, what do you think is today, or what have you seen in the past 5 years, is working well already? And where can we check the box, so to speak? But also, what are your hopes for the future in terms of, hey, we haven't cracked this one yet. This is something we got to do better.
I think a lot of the digital tools out there can help you run good processes. And the best ones can give you a template so you can dramatically increase the chance of having a good experience, both for the people inside the organization that run the process, but also for the citizens themselves. There's not that many tools that does this, but the best ones do this really well. So you actually get a good, as a citizen, you get a good experience when you do citizen engagement. What I do think, I think this is still a lot linked to specific projects. So if you put yourself in the position as a citizen and you want to really help developing your community, then you're faced with different approaches, different projects, different ways of engaging yourself in the bigger process of developing the community. I think to think of how you can help facilitate this process over time, to have a more holistic view on this, I think that's where we have still some way to go. To do that, you also need the back end with using the data more intelligently. You need to have more context information on all of the citizen engagement processes you run. I think this is also something that digital tools can help facilitate.
I agree. And I think that at the same time, we got to think about the citizen experience. And the reason I'm saying that is because what I hear you saying and what I've also been, or still believe, but have been believing for a long time is, yeah, we need, you know, if you can only participate in one or two specific projects or two fields, it's too narrow, right? We want to be able to kind of offer a platform to have, you know, like democratic conversations on all things happening in the city. But someone was challenging me this week, like, hey, maybe we're a bit stuck on that train of thought and maybe we're stuck on thinking too city-centric about, okay, we want 50 projects on there and, you know, we want to show everything that we're doing. And then you get lost in an ocean of details and an ocean of like that you're being overwhelmed, where I guess the answer is not but we need to think of an experience for citizens so that it's tailored to their interests, so that, you know, the engagement opportunities we present are relevant based on where I live, based on where what I'm interested in. So I think, yeah, just adding on top of what you just said, I would be excited in seeing like also tools develop more personalized citizen citizen participation experiences for the end user, for the residents. I don't know if you would agree with that.
I agree. I think it's a really good point. A few years back, we played around with the concept of augmented democracy. Like, how do you enable others to take part? And what kind of information do you put at the forefront to increase the chance of people like finding what they care about without going, like, you can bring this a bit too far, which I think a lot of social media have been doing. So we don't want to go that far, but at least how can we enable people to take part? I think that will both increase the quality of local democracy, and it will also lead to a more socially sustainable city because people are more part of their community.
Augmented democracy. First time I'm hearing that. And do you have a concrete example of a project or something you apply this to? How does that work in practice?
Well, if you think that there's a lot going on in a city or a local community, and you need to kind of add information on top of it to augment some of it, to make the important parts more visible.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. So seeing the role of government in not only just presenting what you are working on, but kind of making a, as you want, like a democratic translation showing like, hey, you know, this is what we're working on. These are the key things to know. Of course, a lot is about communication, I guess, making things really easy to understand, visualizing them well.
Yeah, I also think it's important that we don't, like, since I work for a city administration, we don't always try to take the central role in here. It's also a lot about listening and figure out how we can enforce things that are already happening.
Mm-hmm. I would like to ask you one last question to close this conversation. So what would be your single piece of advice that you could offer to fellow citizen smart city managers who are working on citizen engagement?
I think if you believe in citizen engagement, which I think most people do, you have an obligation to try to realize the potential of the local democracy. And I think as coming from a smart city perspective, I think you're quite well equipped to understand how you can use technology as a necessary part of doing that. And there's so many people that are good at citizen engagement all around the cities and communities. So to help them use the potential in technology, I think that's one of the things that I think smart city managers can contribute with.
Right. Also got a second thing out of what you just said, apart from technology, an important reminder, citizen engagement is about democracy. And that people working in government, you know, like, citizen engagement can easily lead to check the box engagement on a new planning act or whatever. But in the end, it's about democracy, and keeping that in mind, I think, leads to better engagement in the first place for the reason you brought to this conversation today, the diversity and the nuance. All right. Thanks so much, Øyvind. I really enjoyed this chat. Thanks for being with us, and until next time.
Thank you for joining us on our journey towards a democratic future. Subscribe to the podcast to stay connected. Next month, we'll be back with another Trailblazer. And remember, democracy is a journey. It's not just a destination. Stay curious, engaged, and active in your local democracy. Until next time.